You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Senate Republicans are hoping to confirm a new Supreme Court justice by the end of the month, but cases of COVID-19 are casting some doubt on that timeline. We'll look at the process ahead and what a bigger conservative majority could mean for the country. First, according to the Washington Post, some American farms have become hotbeds for the coronavirus. During harvest season, growers for some of the country's largest agricultural companies failed to test workers for COVID-19. In addition, advocates say there was no mandatory personal protective equipment or clear guidance on worker safety. Those failures may have put millions of workers at greater risk of contracting COVID and spreading it to others as they move to farms across state lines. Microsoft and Purdue University say that as of last week, around 128,000 farm workers have tested positive for the virus. That doesn't include part-time or temporary workers. By comparison, that figure is three times higher than the reported number of meatpacking workers who have tested positive. Laura Riley is the Business of Food reporter at The Washington Post. Laura, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me today.
Is this something that's isolated, Laura, to a few farms in a few states, or is this something we're seeing going on around the country?
Well, I got access to thousands of pages of public records across 10 different states. So this is a widespread problem and will continue to be so, largely because many of these workers are migratory. You know, they work 6 weeks here and 8 weeks somewhere else. And often by the time a municipality or a state has decided, oh, we've got a problem here, those workers have moved on somewhere else. So that's kind of the major problem with this group of workers.
Let's talk about that workforce a little bit before we dig more into COVID-19. This is an invisible, I think to a lot of people, an invisible part of our food system, these migrant workers, many of them coming from Mexico or Central America. Can you tell us about this workforce?
Sure. So we have about 3 million farm workers total that have all been deemed essential workers in the pandemic. We have roughly 220,000 that are H-2A visa holders, largely from Mexico. So these are legal visa holders who come through with basically a contractor who sets them up for the season. But we have another 1.5 million undocumented workers. And I think a lot of the major problems have been with that group because they frequently have fears of deportation or losing work. They don't have anywhere to self-isolate. They have language barriers. They have fears of big hospital bills. So they may be a little more reluctant to get tested or to be documented or, you know, contact traced through this process.
And when I think of this kind of work, I think, well, they're outside, they're spread out. Maybe there's not such proximity that leads to spread. Except what I'm not thinking about is where they sleep and where they eat. Can you talk about the conditions that they work and live in that actually might make them very high risk, in fact?
Absolutely. So they are frequently in congregate housing. So often a grower or the contractor who's brought them in from Mexico or Latin America, they set them up in housing. And one piece that didn't end up in the final story, but was very troubling to me, is that New Jersey has this long history of bringing in Haitian workers to do the blueberries for about 8 weeks every summer. And they're put up in pole barns with no indoor plumbing, in bunk beds, basically. And what the state of New Jersey said for them to do to kind of protect the workers is, oh, just put up some shower curtains between these bunk beds. So clearly not sufficient given what we know now about kind of aerosolated, you know, particles. So a lot of these workers live together. They get up in the morning. Most of them don't have transportation of their own. So they get picked up in the morning, you know, 5 a.m., 6 a.m. in school buses, kind of packed in. So there's, or even worst case scenarios, they're picked up in the back of a roll down back U-Haul. So no ability to socially distance or isolate. Lots of opportunity for spread. They often are cooking together at the end of the day. They often have, no running water in the field. So there's no way to wash their hands if they've gone to the bathroom, et cetera. And then if you think about where people are in the field, yes, they are distant one from another as they're doing their work. But where do they take their breaks? You know, it's under the only shade tree. And on Friday, when they're going to get their paycheck, they're clustered around the back of the pickup truck where the grower is doling out the checks. So there are all these places built into their workday where congregating closely is unavoidable.
Talking to Laura Riley, reporter at The Washington Post, about her work on COVID-19 and farm workers, migratory farm workers in the United States at high risk, lots of positive cases. Laura, you spent a lot of time in this piece looking at what companies did and didn't do in response. What did you see as this disease was spreading around the country?
Well, I'm not going to put it all on growers. States were really, behind on this. So we had 11 states that eventually came around to having mandatory PPE, 20 states that have non-enforceable guidelines, and many states that say nothing about what is required of growers to give their workers or to demand of their workers in terms of PPE or social distancing. Growers frequently, in many of the states that I looked at, discouraged testing, strongly discouraged, and in fact, threatened deportation or, losing jobs to workers that came forward testing positive or demanded testing. So, there was very little contact tracing. I talked to lots of kind of state legislators and health affairs workers that said a lot of times when a worker tests positive, they kind of disappear. They give a wrong phone number. They don't, they don't respond. They kind of, disappear in the shuffle here. So it's even when growers have had every good intention of tracking outbreaks, there are ways in which the system makes that very, very difficult.
You report on at least one instance where a grower angrily and actively resisted the health department bringing in testing and trying to talk to workers, right?
Well, I saw that again and again with growers who said, my workers don't want to be tested. Or you'd have these organizations, Doctors Without Borders, et cetera, that would come into a community and set up testing. Obviously, you can't really set up testing for farm workers far away from where they are because they don't have wheels of their own. And it can't be during the workday. They're not going to take time off of work. So it has to be in the evening, on the weekend, but also not so far away from where they live that they can't get there. But even when all of those challenges were met, a lot of times growers strongly discouraged workers from being tested. And then once workers did test positive in a lot of cases, there was nowhere for them to self-isolate. They would be put up four to a hotel room or a motel room, four men with no family relationship, just strangers to each other put up in a hotel room. And if you are test positive, what are you supposed to do in that circumstance?
Have we seen states start to take action to require protections for these workers?
Absolutely. So states like California, a huge ag state, one of the biggest, they have demanded PPE. And then, you have the wildfires that have caused the PPE that was originally surgical masks to pivot to N95s to get rid of that particulate matter from the fire. So they've had numerous challenges there in kind of the Central Valley and some of the other areas that are, the grape growing in Northern California. But yes, I mean, states are pivoting, but some of the early ones, Florida has a really early growing season. I mean, they call it kind of the spring salad bowl of the United States. So they start harvesting March, April, May. And they really didn't get their act together to start testing until June, once most of the workers had moved on. So it really was kind of a rolling, problem.
You mentioned that workers might be reluctant to speak out about these things for fear of being fired or deported. You did hear from some workers who did try to raise concerns. What kind of things did they experience?
I talked to a number of workers, and almost invariably it was, off the record or name changes or that kind of thing, because they were all incredibly afraid of losing their jobs. A lot of these people are low income. I mean, average farm worker earns, $22,000, $24,000 a year. Incredibly, it's a low income job, and a lot of them are sending money back to, Mexico or elsewhere in Latin America or South America. So they're very afraid of losing work, and a lot of them don't have health insurance. I mean, I talked to one worker who went in to get a COVID test and was diagnosed with a hernia and ended up with a, $30,000 hospital bill that there was no way he was going to pay. So there are a lot of impediments to tracking this effectively.
Where in the country are you watching right now to see how workers are doing and how companies or states might be changing protections?
Well, you got to follow the harvest. So a lot of the southern states now, or the southern part of the country, are done with whatever they grow. So workers are moving. We're moving into the northern Midwest. There's still harvest going on in Washington and Oregon. So those are the places that are still likely to be hotspots for a while. But I think that the problem has been, unlike meatpacking or processing workers, those workers live in your community. Their kids play Little League with your kids. They pay taxes. Et cetera. They're part of the fabric of your community, and so it's much more. The onus is on local communities to track that much more effectively than these workers who flit in and out, for 4 weeks at a time every year. So I think that this is going to be an ongoing problem until we have, a vaccine or some kind of effective cure.
Laura, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
Laura Riley is the Business of Food reporter at The Washington Post. We talked to her today about COVID-19 outbreaks at U.S. farms over the course of the harvest seasons around the country. The Post reported that growers in many states largely failed to test migrant workers or provide them with personal protective equipment. 11 states, including Wisconsin, have introduced some mandatory protections for farm workers over the course of the pandemic.